So the last time I was here was a long time ago, right? Like 6 months ago. 6 months ago, I did a Dharma talk on how to regard people who do harm without generating hatred. Since I gave that talk, you know, I have been thinking a lot about how discerning what's true is getting harder and harder. I see some shaking heads. Are you all getting frustrated by this? Does anybody want to say anything about the frustration they're feeling?
I feel that I'm discerning what's true and there's not a darn thing I can do about it.
Okay. Sometimes smoke and mirrors show up as truth. Oh, I heard an mm-hmm out there, right? So obscuring something by saying something else as though it is the truth. And that's not always intentional. You know, people actually do think they know what's true. But we don't all have the same truth. There's many kinds of truth, and the manifestations of them and the roots of the truth, they're different. Because I've been thinking about all this a lot, this is one of those times where I will go to the suttas and I will see what the historical Buddha had to say. So this may be a sutta some of you are familiar with, or it may be a sutta some of you have only heard about but never actually heard. How many of you have heard of the Heartwood Simile? Heard of it? Now, how many of you have actually read it? I have with me the shorter Heartwood Simile, and I am actually going to read this sutta. The reason I'm going to read it is because the Buddha was answering a very specific question that someone asked him. At that time, there were so many different kinds of Brahmin teachers who basically were all saying they had the truth. And this particular person was frustrated and confused about how could all these people say they have the truth when many of them are speaking different truth, or the truth they're speaking is a different aspect of the truth. I really like this sutta because I think it has something to inform us about the nature of truth and how human it is to think you've got it when you may not actually have it. I've heard the Heartwood Simile a lot, but I've never actually had any teacher tell me what Heartwood actually is. And just because I'm geeky, I went and I looked up Heartwood because this particular sutta has terms that we don't normally use. He refers to sapwood, and sapwood is actually the living outermost portion of a woody stem or branch. The heartwood, and remember, in this simile, as you will see, the heartwood is the thing you really want to get. But it turns out, get this, heartwood is the dead inner wood. It's dead. So as the tree ages, its trunk increases in diameter. The entire cross-section of the trunk is actually not needed to conduct sap, along with an increased need for structural support, because the tree is getting bigger, the tree is getting taller. It makes the wood have to change. And the change basically is that the cells nearest the center of the wood die, but they remain intact. It's very weird. They are dead, but they don't decay. Think about this as a metaphor. They're dead, but they're still functioning. That's pretty amazing, don't you think? The only other thing to know is that the dead cells, as the tree expands, it's actually sapwood that's dying off. So the sapwood is what becomes heartwood. So are you ready to hear the shorter Heartwood Simile? Alrighty. A Brahmin asked the Buddha, "Do these Brahmins and contemplatives have direct knowledge as they themselves claim, or do they not?" And in the Buddha's inimitable way, his answer was, "Put that question aside. I will teach you the Dhamma." So the Buddha proceeds to answer the question by not answering the question, but instead giving the higher wisdom, as he is always so wont to do. So the Buddha says, "It's as if one in need of heartwood passes over the heartwood of a great standing tree and instead cuts off the twigs and the leaves, thinking this is the heartwood. One passing by who knows what the heartwood is would see this and say, 'Ah, how could this good man mistake twigs and leaves for heartwood?' Another one, in need of heartwood, passes over the heartwood of a great standing tree and instead takes the outer bark, thinking, 'Now this is the heartwood.' One who knows the heartwood and passes by and sees this would say, 'How could this good woman mistake outer bark for heartwood?' Another one in need of heartwood passes over the heartwood of a great standing tree and instead takes the inner bark, thinking, 'This is the heartwood.' And one who passes by and sees this would say, 'Ah, how could this good woman mistake inner bark for heartwood?' Another one in need of heartwood passes over the heartwood, a great standing tree, and instead takes the sapwood, thinking, 'This is the heartwood.' And one who knows what the heartwood is passes by and sees this and says, 'How could this good man mistake the sapwood for heartwood?' Another one in need of heartwood cuts away the heartwood of a great standing tree, knowing this is heartwood. And one who passes by and sees this would say, 'Ah, this good woman did know heartwood and knew sapwood and knew inner bark and knew outer bark and knew twigs and leaves. Her heartwood purpose will definitely be served.'" So then the Buddha continues, "Similarly, out of conviction, a person chooses to become a contemplative, thinking, 'I am beset by birth, by aging and death, by sorrows, pains, distresses, despairs. I'm beset by stress, overcome with stress. I must know this entire mass of stress so I can discern it and overcome it. Yet in the going forth, this particular person who becomes a contemplative for this reason, along the way of their contemplative endeavors, they actually encounter gain, offerings, and fame, and they become gratified, and they exalt themselves. And doing that, they even disparage others, thinking, 'I am a person with gain, offerings, and fame, but these other monks and nuns are unknown. And because they are unknown, they are of little influence. Unlike me, I'm of great influence.' So this person is similar to the one who mistook twigs and leaves for heartwood. Now another person, out of conviction, becomes a contemplative, and their aim is to realize qualities that are higher and more sublime than gain, offerings, and fame. And what they achieve is virtue. Yet, in the achieving of virtue, this contemplative becomes gratified, exalts herself, and then disparages others, thinking, 'I am a person of virtue with fine qualities, but these other monks and nuns are unvirtuous with evil qualities.' Now, she is similar to the one who mistook outer bark for heartwood. Another person, out of conviction, becomes a contemplative. And their aim is to realize qualities that are higher and more sublime than virtue. And what they achieve is concentration. Yet, even in their concentration, they too become gratified, exalt themselves, and disparage others, thinking, I am so concentrated. My mind is concentrated in singleness. But these other monks and nuns are unconcentrated, and their minds are so scattered. Now, this person is similar to the one who mistook inner bark for heartwood. Another one, out of conviction, becomes a contemplative to realize qualities that are higher and more sublime than even concentration. And she achieves knowledge and vision. Yet she too becomes gratified, exalts herself, and disparages others, thinking, I dwell knowing and seeing. But these other monks and nuns dwell not knowing and not seeing. She is similar to the one who mistook sapwood for heartwood. And now the Buddha asks the Brahmin, which are the qualities that are higher and more sublime than knowledge and vision? The Brahmin can't answer the question. So the Buddha continues. The wise ones go beyond grasping at pleasurable and painful sensations. They do not grasp at equanimity in the mind, and they are not disturbed by perceptions of mind. The wise ones do not grasp at the infinite space of perception and non-perception. Instead, the wise ones arrive and abide in cessation of perception and feeling. This cessation is the heartwood, the unshakable deliverance of mind. This holy life doesn't have as its reward gain, offerings, fame, virtue, concentration, knowledge, and vision. The only reward is recognizing the unshakable deliverance of mind. That is the purpose of this holy life. That is the heartwood. That is its final end. So that is the shorter heartwood simile. There's a whole lot there that could actually be really informative for us as householders. And then there could also be a lot that is not so useful for us as householders. So I rewrote that last part in the several versions that I saw and several translations. The Buddha goes through the jhanas, and you're all pretty seasoned practitioners, so you know the jhanas are these increasingly more concentrated one-pointed states in which the meditator experiences more and more refined perception until there's a point where there's no perception. And then even going beyond no perception. But there's a lot of controversy about the jhanas because this quality he calls the unshakable deliverance of mind is in fact samadhi. There are many, many different ways of thinking about samadhi. So one of the ways of thinking about samadhi is the mind is so still and so clear that this is the platform from which actual insight can occur for a meditator. That up until this point, no insight worth anything occurs. There is another view of samadhi, though, which I actually think is useful for us as householders, because as householders, we are not going off into the forest under a tree and spending the day in these refined states of consciousness in which there's no body. I mean, like, we are out here in the world, so it's lovely to practice jhana as your meditation practice in the morning or in the evening, but you have a life to live. So you can't count on total non-perception and complete clarity in order to help you get through your day. The Heartwood simile is important because the Buddha is saying that in general, it is very easy for human beings to believe they know what's true and yet be mistaken in their knowing. That's why all these people are mistaking all these other parts of the tree for heartwood, but they actually think they've got heartwood. And the Buddha is over and over saying, even though they think they have heartwood, their heartwood purpose will never be fulfilled if they don't actually know what heartwood is. So there has to be a way as householders for us to discern the unshakable deliverance of mind, which the Buddha says, that's the heartwood. And if you can't get there, you are not getting the heartwood. And we have to live in the world and have the capacity for clarity and insight. So this is a really tall order, don't you think? Being an ordinary life and being expected to be clear, calm, and know truth, that's a tall order when you have a body with all kinds of stuff going on and emotions going on and other people and all kinds of situations. You're not sitting under a tree by yourself, only wrangling with your own mind. Are you interested in how we do this? I have to think about this a lot, actually, because this is hard, especially since when I invited some of you to share what was happening for you around truth, pretty much the feeling was, I have the ability to discern what's true. I know truth. And what I see around me is untruth. I think the vast majority of human beings also are there. They have a feeling, I know what's true, and around me are other truths. And then it's a matter of, am I comfortable or uncomfortable with it? And I'm not trying to be relativistic here. I really am not. I'm not one of these people who's like, oh, it's all good. I don't think that serves any purpose. But what I am saying is samadhi means you have enough presence that you are not getting lost in untruths your ego may be telling you about what you think is true. And in general, the big overarching untruth that the ego will tell us, and that's a big us, my ego does this all the time, is I have some capacity to know something others are missing. So I know I have some capacity to know some things others are missing, but I know I do not have capacity to know the things others are missing. I am not an omniscient being. Like you, I have the sense sometimes that there are things I don't know, other people know, and they're saying things that make me question whether or not what I know is true. And that can feel weird because it's destabilizing to think I don't know everything. And we don't. So one of the definitions of samadhi, believe it or not, is the luminosity that is experienced in samadhi, that clear light perception in samadhi, actually arises from developing two things, equanimity and mindfulness. Now those are two things householders can do, I think. What do you guys think? Do you think it's doable as a householder to understand what equanimity is, to cultivate equanimity through mindfulness? Meaning, and I mean vigilant mindfulness, like you are using the tool of mindfulness to vigilantly suss out when the system, your system, the organism, your mind, the whole thing, is somewhere other than in an equanimous state. Now, I don't know if that sounds simplistic to all of you, but what I can tell you is this is the unshakable deliverance of mind. If in the midst of any circumstances, a person actually has the ability to suss out whether or not any response to a situation, internally or externally, is arising from something that is disturbance or perturbation in the system. rather than disturbance, perturbation is arising in me because of something that's occurring, and yet, because I am applying vigilant mindfulness, I know that it's there, and therefore I can apply a set of principles and behaviors that might lead to an equanimous response to it, even though I'm having perturbation. In the Buddhist tradition, vigilant as an adjective for mindfulness is very specific. It refers to the intention to never lose mindfulness. And let's just recall that the actual translation of smriti in Sanskrit or sati in Pali is recollecting. So vigilant recollection in the Buddhist tradition means I am always remembering my intention to be aware of what is arising internally and externally. That's vigilant mindfulness. If you want to read more about vigilant mindfulness, which I encourage all of you to do, The Way of the Bodhisattva, which was written by Shantideva, the fourth or the fifth chapter, is entitled Vigilant Mindfulness, and the entire chapter is on the practice of vigilant mindfulness.
I don't understand how there could never be a subjective view of what is arising internally and externally. Here there is no subjectivity in that?
It's all subjectivity. There isn't a single moment where it isn't subjectivity. There is no objective truth because of emptiness, because of the interdependent co-arising of everything. It is true that in the Western philosophical tradition of dualism, subjectivity does not rank. And that actually was carried on by the scientific tradition. Somehow objectivity is supreme over subjectivity. But because all phenomena are subject to perception, everything is subjective. Therefore, there is no good or bad when it comes to subjectivity or objectivity in the Buddhist teachings, ultimately. Obviously, relatively, 2 and 2 is 4. That is objective because of the way math works. In the relative world of manifestation, there are objective phenomena we know subjectively. And this is important for those of you who think, oh, what does this matter? Subjectivity, objectivity. Actually, our friend here has put her finger on something very important. Equanimity requires recognition of subjectivity at the root of perception. An example. So let's say something is occurring that you are involved with, and you know without any doubt it is unjust. It should not be happening. We have a shared sense of what injustice looks like based on our cultural conditioning. And therefore, there is a level of objectivity that we have about what injustice looks like because we have a shared view of what injustice looks like. Now, if you were in a situation where something unjust was occurring, you would have a myriad of possibilities about how you might respond to it, yes? And your vigilant mindfulness and equanimity and the intention to practice both of those things might actually guide you in how you chose to engage with injustice. So one of the things that might come up for you is, how can I alleviate injustice without creating more injustice? So that might be a very simple frame that one could apply to mitigate injustice but not create more injustice. And in doing that, you would maintain equanimity and you would also maintain vigilant mindfulness because you would be recollecting your intention not to harm and you would be carrying it out in such a way that you would be able to have whatever feelings are coming up in you, but that would not be causing disturbance in the field. You might be having internal disturbance, but you would be in relationship to your internal disturbance in such a way that you would not be creating more disturbance in the field. To me, this requires samadhi because it's very difficult. Have any of you played Go? Yeah, so it's this game where you have to be thinking 6 steps ahead in order to make the right move now. That requires a tremendous amount of skill. to project outcomes 6 steps ahead, especially somebody else's, what they're going to do, in order to make the right move now. The whole Heartwood simile is helping us to establish what truth actually is. Truth looks like I have a deeper sense of what my intention is, and I can recognize actions in others that are not that. And I can also recognize all of the effects that might occur from behaviors, thoughts, beliefs that may in fact not give rise to equanimity or deliberateness. Because ultimately, vigilant mindfulness actually is deliberateness about what you're going to do and how you're going to do it. Because our world right now is so much other than equanimity and vigilant mindfulness, it feels even more important for us, people who are in the world, to not give up our ability to be practitioners, even if we can't be practitioners in the way the Buddha tells us to be practitioners at the end of the Heartwood simile, which is, you go find samadhi, the unshakable deliverance of mind, by going through all the most subtle states and just landing in that true perception. I love that. It's wonderful. And for any of you who've experienced anything like it, you'll agree, it's wonderful. And yet, we can't just abdicate our responsibility as practitioners in our daily lives because it's like, well, I can't do that in my daily life. So my prescription here is, and this also is coming from the Buddha. In fact, this one is from the Penetrative Sutta, actually. And it is instructions for householders. And the Buddha basically answers the question that I've been asking, how does a householder do this? And what he says is that there are these domains which trip us up, the sense world, feelings, perception, our frailty, and all the stuff that happens in human bodies, and afflictive emotions, the kleshas. Sometimes our actions aren't so great, and of course the stresses of life. So the Buddha says for all these, the best remedy for not getting tripped up by them is when they are present, you use vigilant mindfulness. You use this ability to know, without any doubt, the causes of any one of these that's arising. The causes of your attachment to some pleasurable experience. The causes of your aversion to some distressful experience. The causes of your warped perception, the causes of mistaken actions, the causes of the stresses you deal with in your life, the stresses you cause yourself through your own mind. When you know the causes and you know for a fact the multiplicity of ways these things can manifest, and you know that when they manifest, you know the multiplicity of ways they can cause result, you can then know how to avert their arising. Equanimity is so beautiful because equanimity doesn't say don't feel it. Equanimity is not about being someone who doesn't get tripped up by all this stuff. Equanimity is I can recognize being tripped up long before it ever is shown out here. I have so much intimacy with my own system, my own feeling space, my own bodily responses, my own egoic perceptions and actions. I know this well enough that I can, quote unquote, tame it while it's still in here. So I can care for it while it's still in here. Not by berating myself for having all this come up. I'm human. Of course it's going to come up. But instead, recognizing it's here. I really understand if I let this have sway right now, it will lead to a result I may not like, somebody else may not like. It may cause a problem. And just in that alone, that's when equanimity arises. Because equanimity is the space to not cut it off, but to wisely choose, maybe not this, let's try this instead. And none of this can happen without vigilant mindfulness. You can't have any of the deeper knowing without it. When the Buddha says you go for the heartwood, you could go for the heartwood in any moment of your daily life by being open to when you get tripped up. That is a sign. As soon as you feel any perturbation, you feel confused, you feel there's big rage, anything like this, indignation, when you're in the midst of it, that's the moment to cultivate samadhi. And in this case, samadhi means collect the mind by engaging with vigilant knowing. What is this? How did this arise? What will it lead to? And that alone creates enough equanimity on board to then choose skillfully. And that's the heartwood. The heartwood itself is, wow, I've got this big thing showing up, but I'm in it. I'm here. I'm in it. I'm with it. I'm actually engaging with this thing. This is the way you don't mistake your indignation, which would frankly be mistaking twigs and leaves. Remember when the second part of the heartwood simile, the Buddha points directly at the ego of all those contemplatives, owning, oh, I've got this thing, and this is such a great thing. And it's the owning of it in that way. I'm right, they're all wrong. That alone tells you it's not the heartwood. That's the thing you want to watch out for, vigilantly. I'm right, they're all wrong. Then you know you're in twigs and leaves. You're not in the heartwood.